Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network. The Women of Golf Show is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine with insightful reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, helping you improve your game from tee to green. Good morning. Welcome to the Women of Golf, the number one women's golf show around the world, with hosts Ted Odorico and Cindy Miller. Join them as they interview some of the best players from the Epson, LPGA, and Legends Tour, and so many others helping to elevate women's golf. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
All right, good morning, everybody, once again, and welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm Ted Odorico, and right alongside, of course, is none other than Legends Tour player and LPGA professional, Cindy Miller, and we are your hosts here on the Women of Golf. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Ted. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Before we start our show, you were doing something. I know you talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago on the show, and obviously I believe it came to fruition. But what you've been up to this last week, I think something pretty exciting. Go ahead.
Well, I went to Orlando, and we did a corporate event at the Ritz-Carlton, and then I flew to Charleston, where I taught 10 women from Seabrook Island Club. The general manager reached out to me on LinkedIn and said, will you come to our club and teach our women? And I said, well, you better ask your head pro because sometimes they get mad at that. And he said, well, we don't have a woman pro and we have like 2,300 members and we need a woman to come help teach. And I said, well, you should ask the head pro and then you should ask the women. And he did, and they said yes. So he's put together three sessions. I did one in June. I did one this weekend, and I'm doing one in October. And he said, well, do you want to come down and move here? And I said, no. Believe it or not, I love Buffalo. And we like doing what we do. So I said, but I'll help you find someone. And so I did, and they have a new LPGA professional coming to teach there and live there in December.
Right.
So I'm doing these three schools, which was great. And I've taught 20 women in the last two sessions, and we've got 10 women coming in October. And then they're kicking me out, and they're going to have their own teaching professional. So it was pretty cool, and I had fun. And hopefully they had fun.
I'm sure they did. I have no doubt that they learned very well from your expertise. And who knows, they may have you back as a guest instructor from time to time. That, I think, would be kind of cool and fun and great job. I mean, you know, it's nice when somebody reaches out like that through social media and says, hey, you know, we would love to have you. And I'm sure he probably thought when you told him that you were from Buffalo, he's probably thought, this woman's got rocks in her head. Why would she want to stay up in that cold climate instead of coming down here into the sunny south? But I get it, being from the north myself, you know, you just, home is home. And obviously you and
I basically told him I'm unemployable. I like doing what I do and I'm free to do,
right.
You know, we do corporate events, we go places, we do our own boot camps and, you know, we're self-employed and, you know, I teach up here, I teach where I want to teach and I'm free to do what I want to do. And therefore, it makes life better. Plus, we have grandchildren and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And he understood. So, therefore, everything works out better that way. So, it's
exactly.
Blessing.
Good choice.
And I'm lucky.
Good choice. Well,
yep.
Congratulations. And I know the next group of 10 are going to benefit from your expertise as well. All right. As I mentioned, we got a great show here. We're going to be joined by a very special guest here in just a moment. I'm going to introduce her in just a second or two. And then a little bit later on, Cindy, you and I are going to dip our toes once again into the no BS zone, and we're going to talk about mental tips to keep you calm and cool. And we're going to talk about those a little bit a little bit later on the broadcast. But let me introduce this morning's guest. Her name is Carly Cox, and she's from China Grove, North Carolina. She played collegiately at East Carolina University and said that she pursued professional golf because she loves to test her skill set, against the best players in the world. Some hobbies include obviously spending time with family and friends. She enjoys obviously reading and traveling. I guess you'd have to enjoy traveling doing this type of work. And she's also, which I found very interesting, is a licensed real estate broker in North Carolina and obviously plays currently on the LPGA's Epson Tour. So, Cindy, let's welcome our guest this morning, Carly Cox.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing well.
Doing fantastic. Thank you, Carly, for joining us this morning.
Of course. It's my pleasure.
Cindy, do you want to go ahead? Do you want to start things off?
You go ahead.
Okay. So I guess the obvious first question I want to ask you is, as I mentioned in the opening remarks, that you played for East Carolina University. But before that, obviously, you got bitten by the golf bug. So what was your earliest recollection, and what was the turning point for you that you said to yourself, you know what, I think golf might be for me?
Well, I definitely was introduced to the game later than, I guess you could say, most of my peers. My earliest memory of anything golf-related was, I think it was the summer before my freshman year of high school, so I had to be 13 or 14 around there, and we go to the beach with my grandparents every summer, and my grandfather, he was a golfer. His health now doesn't allow him to, but he was just always very interested, so me and my brother went with him to the driving range and on our family beach trip, and I was just kind of like, oh, this is, you know, kind of fun. I had never really been exposed to the game before, and there was an instructor nearby, you know, just watching us have some fun, and he was like, hey, if she actually ends up interested in it one day, like just from peeking over, she might have some, you know, natural ability. And I obviously had a good time and enjoyed it, and when we got back home, I was like, hey, I think I want to, you know, maybe give this a shot. And my parents were probably just as lost as me. They were like, you know, okay, I'm not really sure where to go from here, but we'll try to find you an instructor. And so from there it was history. I played soccer, basketball, volleyball, you know, all the other sports. And I was just like, I think I'm going to ditch those and, you know, try to get good at this. And here we are now. So,
you know, that's kind of interesting. And my next sort of follow-up was to ask you if you played other sports, and you already answered that. But, you know, I could see their, you know, confusion, you know, in how to pursue that, because, you know, unlike other sports, I mean, you can take a soccer ball, and you can, even if, you know, you didn't play on a soccer team, you know, you can kick it around with your brother or friends or whatever, you know, in the background or at the park or something. And it's not really a huge commitment. But to play golf, and especially to be able to go on and play at a competitive level, that takes a commitment and obviously resources to be able to do that. So I can understand, you know, not necessarily an apprehension. Obviously, they wanted you to have fun and do whatever you want to do. But it's a lot more of an involved process, as I'm sure you've discovered as time goes on. So you went on at some point, you got picked up and played at the East Coast Carolina, or East Carolina University, excuse me. Tell us a little bit about that experience, because it's different than what you're experiencing now. Now it's you and the elements and obviously playing against competitors, but there you actually were part of a team. How does that differ for you mentally, let's say, as an example, than what you're doing right now? How did you find that experience compared to what you're experiencing now?
I feel like each, you know, level from like playing junior golf to college, playing college to professional golf, there's a learning curve and, you know, kind of a level up in a sense. It was interesting because you're an individual sport still at the core, right? I mean, I know that you're a part of a 5-man team and you travel together and your collective score counts, but it was always interesting because you know, you were still only responsible for what you did at the end of the day, and it was nice to be in a team aspect because that is the part that you're lacking as far as, you know, an individual sport. It's all you. When it's good, it's all you. So it was nice to kind of have that environment where you could be successful as a whole and also as an individual. I think there was a little bit of learning as far as, you know, let's say if the team didn't have a great day as a whole, but you did individually, it was, you know, you wanted to be happy and proud of your results at the same time you felt for the team because you were all also a part of that. So I think it's just very interesting being an individual sport as a part of a team. I totally enjoyed it. But then now that you're professional, you're kind of, all right, you're back on your own island again. While you have some friends out here, everyone is very much, you know, you have to be a little bit selfish at times and about your schedule, and you have to figure out what works for you, right? I mean, it's not the same among everyone else. And so I think college things were done for you a little bit more as far as the travel, that we're playing this tournament,
scheduling.
You're being here at this time. Yeah. And now as a professional, it's, all right, well, I'm in charge of everything, and I'm my own manager, my own boss, you know, everything. And so I think it's definitely an adjustment at first, but once you realize, you know, hey, I know myself better than anyone else. I know how my body's feeling. I know this is what helps me mentally prepare for the weekend ahead. I think once you take ownership of that and you kind of figure out your groove as far as the schedule, you then even gain confidence from that, and then you figure out, you know, how you can go week to week because, you know, we're playing 5 weeks straight right now, and so it's, you don't have to be at the golf course from sunup to sundown all day. You know, there's also rest and recovery that's important. So I say all that to say it's definitely been a new learning experience at every level and an adjustment. But once you kind of figure out what works best for you, I think it's really helpful to just have that somewhat of a routine and consistency.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, really. You know, obviously, again, on the university side, you're, or collegiately rather, you know, you're playing as part of a team, so you have others to sort of lean on, and they can in turn lean on you. But yeah, where you are now, it's you and, as I said, the elements in that. I mentioned when reading out a little bit of your bio, one of your hobbies is, of course, traveling. How do you find the traveling what you're doing now? And I'm assuming that when you say you enjoy traveling, you're referring more to, hey, let's go to the Caribbean or let's go to some, you know, exotic place perhaps. How do you find this type of traveling? Because you said you're doing 5 weeks in a row, you know, you're back and forth and up different places, a lot of driving, maybe some flying. How does that sit with you? Is that something that is a challenge? Do you enjoy that aspect of it? Getting to see different places and things like that. Give us an idea of how the traveling is for you.
So as a whole, I think this sport has taken me across the country and sometimes out of the country. And so I'm definitely grateful and thankful that I've seen so many states and so many parts of the world, because otherwise I wouldn't have that opportunity, right? I would have no reason to be, you know, among all these places. So at that level, it's definitely like I have a thankful spirit, and I'm like, wow, yes, I've been here and there, and I can tell you stories about these places. On the flip side, you know, when you're doing it 5 weeks in a row and some, you know, the airline cancels your flight or your bags get lost, or, you know, there is the non-glamorous side of things as well on a very much real day-to-day basis. So it's twofold, right? It's amazing you get to see all these cool places, but at the same time, sometimes you're like, I just want to get to my next destination, and however I get there, just get me there as fast as possible. So it's not always glamorous, like I said, but it's definitely something that also takes adjusting to, because luckily I'm from North Carolina, so this last, you know, 4 or 5 week stretch, I'm able to have my car, and there's a few, like it was 7 hours down to Alabama, it was 7 to Arkansas, 7 or 6 back to Alabama, and it'll be close to 10 back to Daytona. So naturally, just when you're swinging a golf club all week and then you hop in the car and, you know, go to your next destination, it can take a toll on your body as well, and just your overall state of, you know, tired and whatnot. But enjoy it, like you said, or you wouldn't really put yourself through all this. But so it's, I hope I've answered that correctly as far as it's the
side,
also the very real side of just, it's sometimes hard logistically. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason why I ask is it's interesting because obviously we've interviewed many young ladies like yourself from Epson and the LPGA tours. And it's sort of a mixed bag of their responses. Some, you know, don't mind it at all. It's not a big deal. They're very, you know, organized and they like to, you know, coordinate things. They time it right down to the last second. And then there's others that just, you know, they arrive at the destination and they're like water pouring out of the car. You know, they're just like, I'm tired and,
right.
You know, where's my bed, you know, where's my bed and that sort of thing. And I don't want to
exactly.
see anybody or hear. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think it's different. Like when you have the, if you're 2 weeks, you're like, okay, I've got this. And then, you know, I think we're at the end of the season and we're 5 in a row. So I think everyone's like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but at the same time, you know, they're like, just get us there. So I think it can also depend on the amount of weeks you play in a row and like what point of the season you're in for sure.
Right. For sure. Cindy, go ahead.
Carly, tell us about the race for the card and what's going on the last 2 weeks and who gets to go to qualifying school and what stage is what, and just so our listeners understand what everybody's playing for. So I'm looking at the race for the card right now, and
yes.
You're sitting 32. What does all that mean?
To be there with me, everyone who's listening. So you've got the race for the card, and what people most refer to is there's 10 girls that come next week by the end of our last tournament in Daytona will get their LPGA cards. So that means full status. They get to play basically with the exception of like the Tournament of Champions of the year prior, they get to play a full LPGA schedule, and they earned that through their consistent play all year out on the Epson Tour. Let's say you end up numbers 11 through 35, which is currently where I fall. You would get to go to the final stage of qualifying school. So you still have the opportunity to earn your LPGA Tour card. You just have to play that final stage of Q school. And they award,
and
I think, well,
called?
I'm sorry?
What's the final stage of Q school called now?
Q series. Yes. Yes. So you have stage one, stage two, and then they call it Q series. Numbers 11 through 35 meet the LPGA girls who may have not retained their status, and you play. I think it's usually roughly around 100 people. Every year the number is different, but you've got roughly 100 girls playing for roughly 40 cards. And then girls who made it out of the first stage of qualifying school, which takes place out in Palm Springs back in August, meet the other Epson Tour girls who basically played but weren't in the top 35, and they all compete at stage two, which happens late October. And so there's usually about 200 people in that field for roughly 30 spots. So you've kind of got this ladder effect back and forth as, you know, who has to go back to what point of qualifying school. And, you know, everyone's fighting for something at this point in the season. I'll say the top 10 card is obviously the goal, but, you know, skipping stage two, you know, being in that top 35 number is very important. Even girls finishing in the top 80 out on the money list here in Epson, that gets you full status for the next year. So while there's an overarching goal, there's also little mini goals within there. And so, you know, number 81 is really looking to, you know, get 80 or better, and vice versa. Number 36 really trying to get into the top 35. So there's everyone's fighting for something here come the end of the season, even if it's not your top 10 card.
So 90th on Epson Tour money list.
Mm-hmm.
What do you get for next year if you don't make it through second stage of Q school? Do you get to play on Epson next year?
You do. It would just depend on your category. So basically, people, if you finish top 100 on this current year's Epson Tour money list, you will have some form of status. Just top 80 guarantees you a full season. Numbers like 81 to 100 would have a category under everyone who competes at stage two. So a lot of girls will still play stage two, hoping to finish, obviously, and move on to Q series. But also, you could pick your highest finish would determine what category you end up in. So let's say they're number 100 on the money list of this year, and they go to stage two and they finish, you know, 50th. Okay, well, now that category is going to be a little bit better than what you would have if you just accepted your 100. Technically, you don't have to play stage two. You would still have some form of an Epson start, but you can guarantee yourself a little bit higher of a position, and because they limit the field sizes of Epson events early in the season and late in the season. So really you want to be as high up as you can just to guarantee as many starts as you can.
Got it. So
yes.
How many people go to stage two?
Like I said, the number is roughly 200. I think about 100 girls made it out of stage one this year. And then you've got about 100 to 120, I would say, that would come from Epson that choose to play. So it's usually somewhere in that ballpark. I'm not sure what, like, the max size would be, but some of the girls, if they have their top 80 status on Epson, they're like, hey, I'm just not going to, you know, spend the money to go to Q school. I'm okay with playing the Epson Tour one more year. But I would say the majority of girls are like, hey, I'm playing stage two because I want to get to the LPGA as fast as possible. And, you know, this is my route. If I finish, you know, top 30 or whatever, I can make it on the Q series. So the mentalities are different among the girls, that I would say as a collective, everyone's trying to play it so they can make it to Q series.
Got it. So of the people going to stage two, only 30 of those people make it to Q series?
Again, rough numbers, because they might say no more than 30 in ties. You know, like the cut out here is usually 60 in ties, so sometimes that might end up T53, you know, so it could be,
I guess.
You know. Yeah. So roughly it usually shakes out to be about 30 girls, 30 to 40 girls, I would say, who make it out, yeah.
We have a young girl that we teach that just made it to stage two. I'm asking for personal reasons as well.
Yeah. It's I think they don't have it on the fact sheet until about the week of, because I think it determines, like, depends on the field size and how many Q series can only go up to a certain number, so they kind of see what LPGA girls would be playing Q series, and then they kind of make their number off of that. So it varies a little bit every year.
Got it. Thank you.
Pat, you're welcome.
Just a real quick follow-up on that. Where is the final stage? Is it going to be held at the same place in Dothan, Alabama this year, do you know, or have they moved it somewhere else?
So they have shortened Q series as a whole. It used to be, I'm pretty sure, 8 rounds, and now they have shortened it. So I believe it's actually in Mobile, because it was 1 week in Dothan,
okay,
1 week in Mobile. Now I think it's just in Mobile this year.
Okay. Yeah, because I think last year, the year before, they had it in Mobile, and then they did the last 4 in Dothan. And last year, I think I might be wrong on this, but I think they skipped Mobile last year and did just Dothan. The reason I ask is I'm not that far away, and I've come out the last couple of years at Dothan to watch some of the players and so forth, and it's always a lot of fun. So I guess I'll have to hoof it over to Mobile if I want to watch it this year.
Yeah.
I'm
not,
which is not that far.
I'm
a couple hours away, but yeah. Oh, well.
You'll have some good golf to watch,
so,
for sure.
Oh, listen, I got to tell you, and I've mentioned this a long time ago on the show, one of the first times I went to watch this, and I was amazed, you know, some of the, obviously it's always fun to watch the golf, but I was just as equally impressed watching all of you, you know, girls on the practice area, just warming up. And also, it was amazing how many had, you know, some sort of training aid or something out in the, you know, on the putting surface, or, and I don't mean just alignment sticks, but they had all kinds of gadgets that were out there. And it was kind of interesting to see who uses what and you know, somebody else would be checking out what so-and-so is using. And it was just kind of interesting to watch how everybody was very organized and getting ready to play for that day. So always a good time. And if anybody – and what's nice is it's for us, the spectators, it's, of course, free to come and watch. So if anybody gets a chance to wherever it is, you need to come and watch these gals play, because they're phenomenal. You guys are doing a fantastic job. I enjoy watching you play all the time. So my question for you is, what has been your biggest hurdle this season? Obviously, you want to get a win. So leaving that aside, what has been your biggest challenge, I guess, would be a better way to phrase it?
It's such a funny thing, because finishes recently, but you – coming into this season, I knew I was playing my best golf I knew just from ball striking, putting, like I knew I was making all of these improvements. And unfortunately, this game isn't always linear as far as like, hey, I've worked really hard. Now where are the results? And it's hard not to want that, especially when, you know, this is what you're working towards. So I would say at the beginning of the year, felt like I worked really hard in the off season, made these great changes, and not that I was playing poorly, but just wasn't quite as good as, you know, how I felt like I was leaving some out there. And all my, you know, inner circle people, they're like, stay with it. You know, you're doing the right things. Like, it will come to fruition, essentially. And started playing better mid-season. Had, like, in the summer, had a top six finish, a top 14 finish. You know, I felt like I was trending in the right direction. And all of a sudden, you know, I have a third-place finish 2 weeks ago now and a second-place finish last week. And, you know, it's great to see those that hard work, and you end up playing the golf that you know you're capable of. And so I would just say, you know, I don't think there's been, like, a super big struggle with all my ball striking or all my putting, but it was just staying consistent and keeping that belief and just knowing, like, it's going to come through because it's very easy to be like, hey, I want this now, and it's just not how this
right.
works. So I would just say, you know, patience and perseverance, I would say, just because it's a long season and it eventually comes through. And golf's not always on your side. So it's great to have those moments where it does happen for you and you are able to, you know, see the fruit of your hard work.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody's different. I mean, you know, we've had some on here who come out very, very strong in the early part of the season with maybe a win or some cases even a couple of wins, and then they kind of peter off as the season goes on. I don't know if it's because they feel confident because they've got those wins that puts them in a good spot for the season. And then you have others that sort of, you know, start a little slower in the season and build up a momentum. So I think everybody's different. You're right. And you just have to stick with what works best for you. What do you do to keep yourself motivated during an event? I mean, obviously the whole season is a different, issue, but, you know, when you're at an event and, you know, obviously if things are going well, you sort of feed off of that energy, if you will. But there's going to be times, obviously, as you know, when things aren't going your way. What do you say to yourself? What sort of gets you, okay, I've got to stay focused. Here's what I need to do. Is there a formula that you've used that's worked for you to keep you sort of up on a positive keel for events?
As I have been out here and learned a little more, I think it might have been easier mentally to just quit on a bad round and be like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? I've worked hard and now this is happening. What in the world? And I think, especially this year, unfortunately, at the end of the season, it could come down to a few dollars. I mean, how many times have we heard the story, you know, hey, she missed her card or she missed Q Series by $5, $10, whatever. So I think just knowing, like, hey, I can learn just as much from this bad round as I can learn from a good round, even though it's not necessarily a fun process. If I could just hang in there, you never know what one, you know, position higher, one position lower could do to you. So as far as, you know, hanging in there and just trying to get as much out of the round as you can, I mean, some days it's just not going to go your way. You know, you're not, it's just not there, and that's okay. But I think trying to just hang in there and learn from the bad, and what if you discover something in that moment that helps you the next time you're in that position, kind of dig yourself out of a hole, or, you know, so I've tried to just stay in that moment and be like, hey, even if this day isn't shaking out my way, like, what can I learn from this and what can I do so the next time I'm in this position, I can, you know, be better and hopefully, you know, help myself finish as high as possible. Because you just never know. And I don't want to say, hey, a sour attitude spiraled this in the wrong direction instead of maybe reining it back into a somewhat decent score. So I would just say mentally trying to hang in there no matter what. I mean, it's easier said than done. But I do know I've personally grown in this aspect, and I think that's definitely helped me this year save a few rounds.
Well, that's good. Again, you always – you know, it's challenging. I mean, Cindy and I have spoken to many young ladies like yourself, and it's challenging, especially, you know, you're running a 5-week stretch and, you know, maybe in your case, you're, you know, had some great, last events, and it's helped you build a momentum to this next event. But there's others that have really not done well at all, and I'm sure it's very, very challenging for them to go into the next event, tied at, last event was 63, or something like that, and now they're trying to go in and muster up the, the fortitude to go on for this next event. I'm sure it presents a challenge. I want to ask you, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this, because, as I mentioned in the opening bio, you have your real estate license. What prompted that? Was that something that you were always interested in? Is it somebody, maybe you have others in your family that was just, that are in real estate that kind of piqued your interest? Or is this something that you want to do, down the road when you, decided that, okay, I don't want to play golf anymore. This is something I'd really like to do. So tell us a little bit about that.
It's somewhat twofold in that aspect. My grandparents, on my dad's side, they were in real estate. So it's always been something that I have, heard about. But so I graduated in May of 2019 from East Carolina and then proceeded to go to Q School and got my Edson Tour status. Was very excited for the year 2020. And as we all know, what took place March of 2020, the world shut down and golf was not happening that year. So I was like, what can I do to better myself in this time period? And me and my now fiance, actually, they were offering, online classes. It was 5 weekends and I believe it was January. So it's not great golf weather anyway. And we decided to do that together. And I don't want to say it fell into my lap, but it was kind of like, okay, if golf's not going on, I'm obviously going to continue to practice and be ready for my rookie season in 2021 effectively. What can I do in this interim? And you make a lot of connections across the country as far as playing with people in mm-hmm. pro-ams or whatnot, and real estate often ties into that. And so I thought, well, this could be a nice blend of my two worlds. And so it's nice to have that in my back pocket. I've done some transactions and learned a lot as far as that goes. And so it's just something nice to have. Yes, I could see myself doing that in the future. So it's just a cool little fact I have, and it's a great conversation starter among some of the people I play with in pro-ams. I played with actually like 3 different groups this year who were in real estate, and they just found it so cool that I had my license. And we often compare, state to state, what, is their law and whatnot, because it varies state to state. So it's pretty cool.
Well, and you've got a bit of a captive audience. I mean, while you're out there playing in your pro-ams, you can just say, hey, you don't by chance looking for a house, are you? I just know somebody that could help you put that together. So
yeah,
gives you a great
exactly.
opportunity to make those connections and helps you,
sure.
fund your golfing career as well. But very interesting. I think it's always good to have other interests too. I mean, obviously I know you want to play golf and that's in the forefront right now, and who knows where that journey is going to continue to take you, but it's always good to have other things that are of interest to you as well, because at one day, hopefully not for many years, but that may fizzle out a little bit, and it'd be nice to have something else that you enjoy doing as well. But Carly, we want to thank you very much for joining us this morning, and good luck this week in Tuscaloosa.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed talking with you guys this morning.
Best of luck, my dear.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a great one. All right. That was Carly Cox from the Epson Tour joining us this morning. And Cindy, we're going to just take a real fast break, and then we're going to come back, and you and I are going to dip into the No BS zone.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those 3 putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back, and thank you for joining us this morning on the Women of Golf Show. Cindy and I are now going to, I think, have a great discussion in the No BS Zone on mental tips that are going to help keep you calm and cool. Hopefully, we will be able to help you with some areas. And this one, Cindy, the first one that we're going to talk about is one I guarantee, believe it or not, I know from playing with people out in the golf course, don't always think about doing, and you'll understand, and so will our audience. But you need to prepare your bag, your golf bag, in advance to going out and playing. What I mean by that is making sure that it's organized. How many times have you seen somebody out there and they're dipping in? Maybe they've hit, an errant tee shot and reached down and realized they don't have enough golf balls, or they don't have any tees. Maybe just a couple in there. I think that's important. Tell us a little bit about, Cindy, did you do any sort of special preparation when you were playing out on tour regularly to make sure that you had everything you needed in the golf bag?
Yeah.
Or is that a redundant question?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, make sure you have balls and tees and Sharpies and sunscreen and a towel that's clean. So yes, you have to make sure you have all that stuff. In fact, when you're doing playing lessons, I've had people that are new that don't even realize they need to have balls and tees, which is sad, but you know, how would they know they need to have balls and tees, right?
Right. I mean, I think for tour players are a little bit different breed. I mean, I think that they, I mean, if you're walking out, whether it's the Epson, LPGA, PGA, whatever, if you're walking out on the first tee and you know, you've hit your drive and your tee's busted up a little bit and you get out to the next hole and find out that you don't even have a tee in your bag, or you've hit an errant tee shot and you haven't got, I mean, that's just, I hate to say it, that's stupidity on a professionals. I mean, that's just, I know it's not going to happen. They've got caddies in most cases, but I can understand for an amateur golfer, this is probably happens a lot more. I mean, they don't necessarily have to have some of the typical stuff that pros have. I mean, whether they need a Sharpie, I always recommend having something like that in, not for score, but, you know, marking a ball or what have you. But you'd be surprised at how many people will go out that are, can't break 100 and they've got 3 golf balls in their bag, and you know that they're not going to have 3 golf balls by the time they hit the turn. So I think preparation is key, and it's also a way of, you know, if you can't organize your golf bag before you hit out in the golf course, what do you think that says about you once you get out in the golf course? That sort of tells the story, don't you think?
Yeah. You know, again, you've got to plan ahead and you got to know what you're doing. So I agree. Totally agree. You've got
the next two,
know what you're doing.
Yeah, you have to be organized when you go out. And it sounds very simple, but again, and there's other things too. It's not just the equipment, but also, you know, making sure maybe you've got a snack. Might be some, you know, some almonds, or it might be, you know, something, and, you know, an energy bar or what have you, of some kind, something that's hopefully nutritional. The canicus, you know, you can get a little hungry out there and scarfing down a chili dog at the turn or something, you know, else like that. The cart girl comes up and is not going to give you the sustained energy. So it's always good to have something like that. The next two are kind of do work hand in hand. We're going to hit them one at a time, though. Staying in the present moment. This is a big one, I think. Obviously, the tour pros have a different way of doing that. But I think as far as our amateur golfers, needing to stay focused and in the present moment is important. Tell us a little bit of why you feel that.
Again, in teaching this golf camp or mini school this weekend, I think people expect to be able to change their game in 10 minutes. And with what Carly just said, when she gets upset and she doesn't hit the ball the way she wants to, you need to stop and yourself, you know, I may not be playing well right now, but there's consequences to my behavior. And she understands that she has to save the round, because if she gets real upset right now, that could show a consequence down the road. And one shot could make the difference between her keeping her card or finishing in the top, you know, 80 or the top 35 and not having to go to stage two. You know, all those things matter, taking toll of being able to break 100 or break 90 or break 80. So, again, you have to be able to rein in your emotions, if you will.
Yeah.
But you don't learn that until you blow it enough to be able to reflect and say, maybe I acted like an idiot. But you learn that, hopefully, by acting like an idiot and then learning that that was a silly move. What do you say?
Well, here's a couple of things that I recommend, and I think they're very profound. Number one is, why are you there playing? Are you there to play golf, or are you there for some other reason? Why I say that is there's a lot of people, and you know, we've heard this analogy so many times over the years, and I agree with it to a certain degree, but there's a time and a place while you're there. You know, playing business golf is a great opportunity to help your career. I agree, but not while you're playing on the 18 holes. There's things that you can do. You can certainly have conversation, but you're not there to do business. You know, your secretary's not there doing dictation, or you're not there, you know, doing, you know, multimillion dollar business deals on the phone while you're, you know, lining up your next shot. So you need to sort of forget those external factors like career and even family challenges. Maybe, you know, you're having some family challenges. You need to, if you're going to be out there playing, you need to sort of shove those aside momentarily and really focus on and being in the present. The other thing is sounds very simple, but you'd be surprised. Things like switching off your phone, your cell phone, preventing emails or text messages that are distracting you and distracting your playing partners. You know, if you're there constantly, you know, your phone's buzzing. I mean, most people are pretty courteous nowadays and they will put it on a vibrator or something. But, you know, if that thing's on the golf cart and you're up looking and answering texts when it's your turn or in between that, it's very distracting and it's not an enjoyable thing. So, you know, you need to decide if you're going to play golf, play golf. Move those other things aside. Deal with them when you get, you know, at, you know, obviously if there's certain important things, you know, if you've got a family emergency that you're waiting, maybe it's not the best opportunity to get out there and play. Maybe you need to you know, say, okay, I'm going to have to pass guys on this particular game today because I've got a family crisis I have to deal with, and you know, it's going to be a distraction anyway. So, and that's not to sound, you know, uncaring, but it's very unsettling for your playing partners to be out there and you've got one guy or sometimes even more that are constantly distracted with other things. It's just not a pleasurable thing. So stay in the present, focus on the reason you're there. You really have one job to do, and that's to get around the golf course as few shots as possible. That's the only job that you have there. How you do it is obviously going to be up to you and your strategy that you're going to take there. But that's really what the whole purpose of golf is to get around the golf course as few shots as possible. So stay in the present. The next one goes hand in hand with this, and you kind of alluded to it, and that is one shot at a time. You have to, again, as you're staying present, you know, a lot of amateurs, Cindy, I'm going to start this off real quick and then I'll let you chime in. They're estimating their scores right from the get-go. They're thinking about, well, where can I pick up birdies and bogeys and that sort of thing, and they're not really focusing on the current shot, and that adds to all kinds of problems. So walk us through what they should be doing at that point.
Say that again.
Well, we're talking about one shot at a time, and a lot of amateurs are thinking about their score. They're thinking about other things, where on the golf course. They're not really focused, again, in the moment, thinking about that shot that they're – so they're standing, let's say, on the tee or they're standing in the fairway. They're not focusing on that shot. So walk us through what they should be doing instead.
Well, you should play each shot one at a time. So if you're – let's say you're teeing off on the first hole, I'm going to walk up to the tee box and I'm going to look at the hole and say, all right, well, how do I best play this hole? And you have to play this hole within your own skill level. Meaning what? Well, if I'm a 20 handicap and it's a dog leg right and I want to try to cut the dog leg, but I don't hit it far enough, cutting the dog leg is not my smartest play. Aiming left is my smartest play. So I might tee off the right side of the tee box so that I don't look at the trees on the right and I'm looking at the open fairway on the left. And, well, what if there's a bunker on the left that I can reach? Well, then I might, you know, I would laser the bunker to see how far it is, and I might tee off with a 3-wood. So this is all thinking before I even pull the club out of the bag. Mm-hmm. So I would laser the bunker, see how far it is, pull out a 3-wood, stand on the right side of the tee box, take a couple practice swings, and then I would know what my pre-shot routine is, walk up. I would walk up again. I walk up with my right hand on the club, walk up open because I'm right eye dominant, set to make sure I'm the right distance from the ball. And then when I'm swinging, I'm a visual auditory. I pretend I've got a spike through my chest so I don't sway. And then I say to myself, swing, hinge, kill. So I'm thinking while I'm swinging, because I have an evil twin in my head named Cynthia who might yell at me like, look out for the bunker, you know? So again, I'm thinking the whole time or talking to myself because Cynthia is going to say, look out for the bunker. And right. So I know this because I want to make sure that I'm paying attention to the task at hand rather than the outcome. And how do I know that? Because I've played a lot and blown it a lot. So it's very important that you're always focused on what you're doing here and now and not what you did on the hole before or you want to shoot. And I don't think people.
Go ahead. Sorry, Finch.
I don't think most people know that. One of the students we had at the golf school we just did was very high C, which means conscientious and analytical, and she wanted a formula for everything, and I said, well, that's great, but you have to be able to hit the ball where you want it to go, and if you're not able to do that, you can't have a formula because, you know, there's no guarantee that you can hit the ball where you want this formula to work. So the first thing you have to do is work on the swing to make sure you can hit the ball where you want the ball to go. So the formula always works and no one hits the ball perfectly out every time.
Exactly. And, you know, again, just to very quickly summarize on this, you know, a lot of amateurs are so focused on, you know, the whole 18 holes, the whole course. They're thinking which hole they can pick up on. And it's okay before you step out there to be mindful of that. You know, especially if you're playing in a tournament, you know where your strengths are, you know where your weaknesses are, so you have a sort of a game plan. It's part of your plan. But once you step up to that golf shot, that needs to be left out of your thought process. And you, as you pointed out, you know how far, based on, you know, what level of player you are, how far you can typically hit the ball, and you need to pick out that intended target. And you're really, your sole job at this point is to get the ball from its current position to near your target. And there really should be nothing else in your mind. And that's really the point that I'm trying to make. And obviously, you know, your end goal is to shoot a specific score. But you can't achieve that if you're allowing yourself to be distracted. So again, the two fall together, you know, stay in the present moment, current shot at hand, set yourself up for success on that particular shot. And then once that's done, then you move it aside and now it's the next shot and you go through the same process again, which brings us to our next one. And I know we've talked about this, but I want to many times about the pre-shot routine, and we don't need to go through a specific because that's uniquely different. And you gave a great example for yourself of what you do as you're preparing for each shot. But I want people to think of it from a different perspective, exactly what the pre-shot routine also does is really what it is. It's a transition from one play to another without any break. And what I mean by that is, you know, you've just finished one shot. You just hit your last shot. now you have a transition. You're getting prepared for your next shot. So you have a preparatory moment or a few moments to go through that routine to get yourself ready psychologically, get yourself mentally prepared and physically prepared to the next shot. So think of the pre-shot as a transition. If you go to a movie, you know, one scene doesn't just all of a sudden blend in. There's sort of a transition that happens and the next scene comes into play. So think of it that way. And so you're preparing, and what you do in that pre-shot routine needs to be consistent. It's like a curtain call. The curtain's going up, the curtain's coming down in between those different scenes. So in the case of on the golf course, each shot is going to be different, but there's a transition period, and that should always remain consistent, and that's your pre-shot routine. And it's very important, I believe, and Cindy, I know you would agree, is you need to find one that is consistent, the same length of time, the same steps that you go through. It doesn't matter whether you're hitting off the tee, whether you're out in the middle of a fairway or you're on the putting green, you need to have a pre-shot routine and go through that process and treat that as though it was a transition. Anything you want to add?
Nope.
Another one that we, I think, and again, this one here can vary a little bit. Some people have a different approach to this. You need to plan your hole, I think, from the tee. Some people like to plan it from the green back. And that's okay. I don't know if you have a preference. I mean, obviously you're standing on the tee, but if you've played the course before, you know where the areas are. So you can, theoretically, you could plan your hole from the green back, saying, okay, I know what's up, you know, what's up ahead. So I know where the open areas are. I know where I can make. So you could, in a sense, plan from the green back. But you need to plan the hole as I guess, the point. What should we be thinking about here? What should the amateurs be out there that obviously don't do this? What advice would you give them?
Forward, not the green back. It depends. Whichever way it works best for you, what would you say?
I'm in your camp. I mean, if you're playing your home course and you're really familiar with the course, if you've been playing for many years and you know that course like the back of your hand, the obvious exception is you don't know unless your eyesight's extremely well, especially if it's in a case where you're dealing with a dog leg, you don't know where the pin's cut. So, you know, maybe your initial thought is I need to be out on the right-hand side of the fairway to attack that pin that's maybe on the left. But if it's on the right, that may not set you up appropriately, or there may be other factors. So it's good to be conscious of the hole from the green perspective if you're looking back from the green. But at the same time, you're on the tee box, and you're not on the green. So you need to figure, okay, where do I need to position? So there's benefits to both, but I think I agree with you. I think you have to plan the hole, and you have to be realistic based on what you had said earlier is you have to know your limitations. If you're not a solid ball striker, that's a whole different issue. You've got to work on that off the golf course. But if you don't hit it very far, then you need to sort of plan a strategy. Okay, how am I going to – this is a par five. It's a long hole. I know I'm not going to reach it in two. I may not even reach it in three, depending on your level of play. So I have to play smart. So you need to plan that out. And I think that's the best way to do it is to say, okay, where's my first target? Okay, maybe I hit the ball, my driver, maybe I hit it 175 yards. I'm not a very big hitter. Maybe I'm a senior golfer, so I need to say, okay, where can I position this first shot to give me a good opportunity to get and be successful for my next shot? So there's a preparatory step that goes here. Any thoughts that you have?
No. I mean, you're right. You have to plan the whole thing out. Depends on how hard you hit it, and don't try to be somebody you're not. Just be you and be the best you can be. And don't feel bad about how far you hit it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
The best
and all,
who you are.
Yeah, and all of those things are important while you're on the golf course to be thinking about and just say, okay, here's what I've got. This is the game I've got today. You've warmed up on the practice tee in preparation. You know what kind of swing you're going to have that day. You know pretty much how far you're hitting the ball. With many of your clubs, maybe not all of them, but many of your clubs. So you can certainly, draw a fairly good, accurate, assessment of that. And then that's what you work with on the golf course. You don't tinker around. You don't make changes if there are changes to be made, they happen afterwards or when you get together with your professional again. Don't start monkeying around when you get on the golf course. So you need to plan the hole based on the game that you have there today, the distance you're hitting your shots, work on that, and play smart. It's better to be a little bit more conservative if you're not a very strong player than to try to, you know, I mean, if you're not, if you're barely breaking 100 and you've got an island green on a par three and you're, you know, the pin's cut on the far left, you know, right near the water and near the front of the green, why are you aiming at the pin? You should be trying to hit it to the fat of the green. And if there is, I mean, if it's an island green, it's a little tougher, but if let's say it's three quarters surrounded by water and there's a bailout area and you're not a very strong player, I would hit the bailout area and try
to
go from there. So, right, you know what I'm saying? You've got to be smart about it. And people always say, well, I don't know how to break 100. Well, that's one example right there is play smart. You know, you can keep trying to do the same thing, but that's a definition of insanity and expecting a different result. And so play smart, think logically, and then if you want to improve and you want to be able to be a little bit more aggressive player, then you have there's some work. You've got to put the work in. I just want to hit a couple of more real quick here. I think when in doubt, and we've talked about this, you know, since you've played in many pro-ams, hit more club. How many times, Cindy, have you been out there and maybe it's a five iron shot and the amateur is pulling out his six iron, and you know based on what you've seen, maybe a few holes, he ain't going to get there. Your
right.
thoughts?
Well, I had that this week.
Right.
I'm like, what club? You know, are you in the hell already? There's no way it's getting
there. Right.
You think you
right.
are. I mean, you hate to be rude, but it's ridiculous.
Well, I think what it is that people fail to understand is you might be out in the range and let's say you've got your 7-iron and you hit a really nice 7-iron and it goes 155 yards. And then the next one's 140 yards. And then, you know, maybe, you know, 120 and then 145. And it's, in other words, it's all over the place. And then you step up on a shot and let's say it's 150 yards from the hole or from the green. And you're thinking, yep, this is a 7-iron. 10 shots that you hit on the practice area warming up only averaged 125, 135, let's say, even. That's not going to make, that's not necessarily going to do it. You may not make it to that 150 because on average, you're only hitting at 130. So that means you're going to come up short and maybe there's some bunkers there. Maybe there's a, you know, a little bit of a water area there. Who knows? It could even be just a grass bunker. So you need to make sure you're taking enough club that you know for sure. So if the 7-iron is only on average getting you 135 and you've got a 150-yard shot, maybe you need to dial it up to a 6-iron or whatever club you know you're going to be able to get there with.
Yep.
Agree? I mean,
totally.
it makes – yeah. And I mean, listen, as we – I know for myself as I get older, I don't hit it. I mean, I can still hit a pretty good ball a good distance, but I know I don't hit it as far as I used to. So for me to, you know, it becomes an ego thing, and I get it. But anyways, last one I want to do it real quick. What's that? Sorry.
I said it's called surrender.
Yep, exactly. And a great way to end this segment is enter your happy place. The final tip is to really help with your optimal golf mindset is to enter your happy place when the round isn't going according to plan. Maybe it's, you know, sipping a margarita on a beach chair or what have you. In other words, get those negative thoughts and memories. Cindy, I'm sure over the course of your career, we all face it. You've had to enter a time or two into that happy place. What's your happy place?
Be grateful. Think of my kids and my family and be grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I couldn't
be
agree.
Sure to be.
And you know, and something really I think is really good too. I mean, you know, we're having a little bit of fun with that, but really, even in between shots, you know yourself for, you know, four and a half, 5 hours, whatever, you know, it's taking around nowadays for you, you cannot be constantly thinking about swing mechanics and whatever. So in between your shots, as you're walking up, or even if you're driving your cart, take a moment and get into that happy place. Pay attention to your driving, of course. You don't want to end up in, especially if you're in the South, you want to end up in Alligator Alley or something, but with the golf cart. But, you know, enter that happy place a little bit. Think about something, you know, again, it could be family. Maybe it's the grandkids. Maybe, you know, it's your partner or what have you. You know, just think about something that really makes you happy. And then when you get back up to and you're ready to hit your net shot, then you dial it back in. But you have to have – that's the time really – and I know it kind of contradicts what we talked about. That is your opportunity to get out of the moment and just think about some distract. That's a distraction that's okay to have at the appropriate time. So enter your happy place, you know, when it's appropriate, and just enjoy yourself. Because otherwise you're not. You're just going to be if you're thinking nothing but golf 24/7 and you're not improving and you're struggling with your game, you're not going to be a happy golfer. So you have to take a moment and smell the roses and enjoy and just think how lucky you are to be able to play really, in my opinion, the greatest game out there. The best way to do that is to occasionally enter into your happy place. So I think those are some good tips. I think we covered some good ones. Another one, obviously, is never give up. Always continue to – that's another one in there. We'll have to save that for another time. But I think, Cindy, we're going to have to invite Cynthia on the show one day as a guest. I think we haven't heard from her in a while, so I think she would be a good guest. Maybe we'll leave Cynthia for our last show of the season and give everybody an update. That'll be a good way to finish off the season. But on that note, we want to thank everybody, especially we ran a few minutes over, my apologies, a special guest, Carly Cox from the Epson Tour. Thank you, Carly, for joining us, and good luck, as we said. And hopefully you got a few nuggets out of our No BS Zone discussion this morning, mental tips to keep you calm and cool. On that note, on behalf of Cindy Miller, I'm Ted Oderico. Thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Women of Golf, and we will see you next week right here on the Women of Golf show. Thanks, Cindy. Have a good one.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Women of Golf show. Ted and Cindy wish to thank this week's special guests. Remember to join them every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the iGolf Sports Network or on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. To get updates on the show, you can follow the Women of Golf Facebook page at www.facebook.com/womenofgolf. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.